Good beer.
I could beer too.
Yes.
Although my first one is not beer, so.
I have two beer. Two
I
beer.
have cider and beer.
I could cider and beer.
I got, yeah, me cider and beer.
Yes.
But it's big. Oh, it's not big cider, but it's tall boy cider.
Why can't I have no kid and three beer?
Why can't I have both? Kid go to sleep. Me have another beer.
That's right. Hey, welcome to Talking Heads, everyone. Episode 301. God, that sounds so weird. Your once weekly live show for the latest in beer and tech news. I'm Jeff.
I'm John.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining us on this Wednesday night or in podcast form over on anchor.fm or wherever your favorite podcasts are found. If you've never seen the show before, we talk beer, we talk tech, we talk games, pop culture, entertainment, sometimes some Star Trek. All super chats are right on the air so long as they will not permanently demonetize the channel. We do drink alcohol on the show, and if you're drinking along with us, alcoholic or not, let us know in the chat and we'll give some early show shout-outs as we go along. Last but not least, if you'd like to take part in the super secret chat and the even more super secret super secret after party, think about joining the Patreon. Link is down in the video description. As a bonus, you'll get exclusive access to the Discord server where you can chat with myself, John, Rhett, Steve, all the hosts from Talking Heads, and join the awesome community that hangs out over there.
It is. It's a fun community.
It is. Jeff has a new headset. Thank you for noticing.
It's the
We're
Backstreet Boy
given.
version.
Yeah, we're given the Antlion Audio the Chimera Solo a run through its paces tonight, seeing how comfortable it is, how I like it. A couple of reasons for that. Number one, I'm a huge in-ear monitor guy. I've been doing in-ear monitors on the show for probably like 2+ years now. And before that, I wore in-ear monitors for playing bass and all kinds of things like that. So they're super comfortable and I love them. But assuming I like it, Antlion Audio will be a sponsor of Talking Heads starting next week. So,
Oh,
ooh,
if you like it.
yeah.
So we all get them?
I can talk to them. If the sponsorship goes on long enough, I bet I could send out some pairs. So.
Be like, oh, this one doesn't fit my ear anymore. We need to test it on a wide range of different people.
But no, I mean, I'm not going to speak for them and as far as what they want to sponsor. All they're doing is buying an ad spot.
Ah.
But hey, maybe they want to kick some audio our way. That'd be kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny. I met with two different companies up at LTX that are. So I drove to Canada, scheduled some meetings with some companies, only to find out that two of like the five or six companies that I met with up there are local in Portland, and Antlion Audio is one of them. So we drove to Portland simply to not meet in Oregon.
You're like, I know they're both talking. You're like, yeah, I know this great beer spot. It's in my local town. Where are you from? Oh, I know a great spot too. Yeah, it's called it's called like Deschutes or like we got this great beer. Oh yeah. Oh wait, what? It's Great Notion. Oh, yeah.
Just right around the corner from me.
Yeah.
No, that's kind of how both the meetings went. So anyway, so hopefully Antlion, new sponsor of the channel starting next week. So this one was free. I've got a couple of beers in front of me, and I wanted to, with no preconceived notions, see what I did there. I wanted to test out the best IPA in the world. Versus,
Ah, I know what he's going for.
there you go. Versus kind of just a Eugene standard. Okay.
I already know what you're going for.
No, you don't on the second one.
Oh,
Okay.
well, when you say Eugene standard, there's only like
Right.
two I could probably think of.
Right. Well, I wanted to go 7% versus 7%. I didn't want like anything else. Like it, so if you go, and I wanted to go more of a standard IPA rather than a double or a super hopped or, you know, things like that. Like I could have gone total domination and whatnot. It's like, you know, triple hopped, you know, kind of thing. That's not a fair fight. I wanted to go fair fight. Who makes a better IPA? Bell's Two Hearted.
Okay. I knew that one.
Okay. Or I went with Ninkasi Eclipsosaurus.
Okay.
Which is 7.2. And I'm trying to go like, this is definitely their middle of the road IPA. Like they've got like Megalodon at 10%. They, like I said, they've got Tricera hops, which is their triple hopped IPA. I wanted to go for just their, here's an IPA. Enjoy. Fair fight. So today we're going to fight.
You know, yeah. What's funny is my other beer is Ninkasi's, but there's a funny thing behind it is they went and rebranded and they no longer have the standard beer names. Now it's just IPA, double IPA, triple IPA, hazy imperial IPA.
I saw that in the store today. Ninkasi is going through a massive rebrand, which is actually a little sad to see because I really do like those. So unique. They had a 12-pack there, and it just said Ninkasi, and Ninkasi was big and bold. Mm-hmm. And then it said Northwest IPA. If you look inside the artwork, it says Total Domination.
Oh,
they're
keeping the
name. They're keeping the name Total Domination and everything else. They're just putting more of the emphasis on Ninkasi as the brand rather than Total Dom and the artwork dominating it.
Well, what I like then is that they're including there, because it says Ninkasi, but they're including a 10% within the variety pack. So that means it's probably Megalodon.
It probably is. Yeah.
So yeah, for $20, you can get 2 8%, a 10%, you know, or two varieties of an 8%, a 10%, and like a 7.8 or something.
Right. Yeah. That
for $19.99, that's a good box to get.
That's a pretty good box. Oh. Anyway, let's see. John, what are you drinking?
So today I'm going to be jumping the bandwagon, as it's all been released now, but I'm going with a pumpkin flavored cider.
It's not October.
I know, but they're all out, and so I got Portland Ciders, pumpkin spice cider, and then my other ones are some Ninkasi's.
Okay.
So,
well, both of these are 19 ounces, and so I figured I should probably stop at 2.
Well, this one's a 19, and then I grabbed 2 12s.
Yeah, at least officially, I'm stopping at 2. Starting with the Two Hearted, and it being a 19%, this one should warm up fairly nicely. I'm gonna put this one back in the fridge so I can go through the same evolution of this one. So if you kind of want to intro yours real quick, and I'll jump back in here in a second.
Yeah, sure. So it's Portland Cider Company, as the name sounds. It's from Portland, Oregon, not Portland, Maine. Seasonal release, it's 6% standard cider, Northwest apples, autumn spice. It has that typical cider, some people call it like rotten fruit. I actually kind of like this. This is a bit more of a traditional cider. It has a little bit of a fruit funkiness. It is wine crystal clear. You can see my face through that, so that's nice. I like it. Light aromatics of apple and cinnamon. It smells fantastic. It has that apple pie bakiness to it. I almost wish it was more like pumpkin and brown sugar, but that pumpkin spice, and that's what it is. It's pumpkin spice, it's not pumpkin. Okay. So it's autumn spice. So autumn spice. That's what they call it, but it's pumpkin. They name it pumpkin spice, classic autumn spice.
Yeah. So it's that nutmeg pumpkin, ginger, cinnamon, allspice, ginger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that classic autumn blend.
Yeah. But then they call it pumpkin.
So yeah. Like, well, you got to sell it based on who's going to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to call this autumn spice.
There's a reader board near me that says tacos are better than pumpkin spice, and I'm tired of pretending otherwise. Yes. All right, we do have a couple of shout outs to give in chat here. First off, where'd he go? Hardware Haven joining in. How's it going, man? Let's see. Michael's got an Angry Chair Infinite Dunks Oatmeal Stout, 8.5%. We've got Outdorp, Two Town Cider House, Ruby Revelry.
There we go.
Yeah, a little Bend, Oregon flavor. We've got Andrew drinking Odell Brewing Company IPA, 7%. Tyler's also drinking a Two Hearted from Bell's Brewing in his home state of Michigan.
Saw that.
Yeah, so, yep. Hey, twinsies. Let's see. FRS Drake, New Trail Brewing Replenish IPA, 7.5%. Hardware Haven Prairie Artisan Ales Barrel Aged Moose Boots, 13.4. Can anyone beat 13.4 tonight? Now, this is not a competition, but it's also a competition. I want to know.
No, my largest will be 10.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm trying to fair fight my IPA, so I'm trying to stick right at 7%. And by the way, I bought like 8 of these 19-ounce cans today. All of them were $3. They were $2.99.
I love it, right?
Which is where I got the idea of, like, you know what? I want to put up this against something that matches it. Yeah. And decide once and for all, is Two Hearted the best IPA in the world? Don't beat me to the conclusion. I'm trying to enter this unbiased. That's why I wanted to re-chill that one.
I'm just giving my opinion.
Okay. So yeah, Novella Hubs says need to go triple IPA. Oh, I can beat Two Hearted. That's not the question. It's can I beat it in a fair fight?
Yeah. I've always wanted to do a video of like everyone like blindly bring X in a category, your favorite version, and be like, what is your best example of a Pacific Northwest IPA?
Yeah,
and you have to give. And then we, you know, like four people, all of us would fight over, okay, this is the reason why, let's all taste it and let's see if we all compare notes.
Yeah.
You know, we can even do domestic lager and Rhett could finally maybe have a chance at winning. I'll be like, okay, Rainier's actually not bad.
It's actually not bad. But what's really funny is I stacked up Rainier against pub beer with Rhett and he admitted that pub beer was better. He didn't do it on camera, but he admitted pub beer was better.
I wouldn't mind putting like pub beer up against Henry Weinhardt's.
Yeah,
because that's back in Oregon now.
Yeah. We've got a couple wines chiming in at 13%. Novella Hub wants to know if I'm challenging him. I don't remember what Novella opened.
I didn't see. He says,
yeah, he says I need to go triple, which I agree, but I don't see Novella opening anything. So Novella, if you've got 13.5 beat, like the game is yours. Elmas chiming in with Edmundo Cabernet, so 13%.
Rev's got a cheap brute at 11.5, that's fine. My wife likes a nice brut champagne.
Yeah,
that's all she drinks.
All right, so let's get into some news today. Yeah. Obviously, we had the Apple event that happened yesterday. A very interesting thing also happened in the state of California yesterday. And that is that California became just the third state to pass electronic right to repair as legislation. This passed both the state legislature and the state Senate, although it needs to go back to the Senate for a minor procedural like language change. It just needs to be reapproved. But given that it passed 65-0 in assembly and 38-0 in the Senate, I don't think that's going to be a problem. now, I have some thoughts on this bill. I have not read the bill front to back, but and by the way, iFixit is a co-sponsor of this bill. They are they came and spoke at the legislature and the Senate, and they are one of the major players trying to get this passed. If we scroll down a little bit, let me see where that exact statement was. Though the bill is strong and should make repairs more available to everyone, which by more available, any electronic device for under $99 has to have parts available to both repair shops and consumers for 3 years after the product is first brought to market. For those over $100, it'll be 7 years. And this all goes into effect. The bill applies to electronic and appliance products. So that's also going to be like your fridges, your dishwashers, your things like that. Sold after July 1st, 2021, although the bill doesn't go into effect until July 1st, 2024. Anyway, though the bill is strong and should make repairs more available for everyone, it allows manufacturers to continue engaging in parts pairing. And that's a big point of contention, specifically with Apple as of late, because it's not necessarily, can I buy an iPhone screen replacement? It's, will the screen work when I put it into a phone that it didn't originally ship with? We've seen a number of different strategies from Apple to basically kill off the practice of repairing anything by pairing them either through calibration or encryption from the factory. If you've replaced an iPad screen and notice that your pencil can no longer draw a straight line, well, it's not calibrated for that particular iPad is what they claim. Although, is your digitizer that crap that it can't recalibrate itself on the fly? Doubtful. We've seen screens that can no longer color shift or shift their color temperature or things like that. We've seen screens refuse to start up entirely. The Mac lineup, they've got SSDs that are locked to encryption chips built onto the system board. And so you can't swap out the SSD that came with the device. and all kinds of other maddening practices like this. This bill does not block that as a practice. They, in this term usually meaning Apple, but they can also combine parts into expensive assemblies, which makes repairs more expensive. There's another key point to this. They can also combine parts into expensive assemblies, meaning that fusing LCDs into glass panels and making them completely irreparable, Microsoft Surface, is still totally allowed. Also,
it's a new part. Yeah.
Right. Also, companies are only required to provide the tools and equipment for repairs that they themselves would do as a service to customers. And this doesn't state that the company has to open repair services to end users and customers. So if Apple themselves doesn't offer screen replacement as a service, they simply sell you a new phone if you come in for repair, they don't have to support anyone replacing a screen on anything. So while this is going to make parts available, it doesn't necessarily mean things are going to get any easier or more repairable to the end user. Now, again, I'm coming into this from a perspective of I haven't read the entire set of litigation, the bill that's been adopted top to bottom. But I understand enough about this fight and kind of the balls that were cut off of this to make it pass. Keep in mind that the bill is so cut down that even Apple and HP voiced their support for it passing in the state of California, for which both HP and Apple reside as corporate headquarters. I could be wrong, but the language that's within this bill may have just cemented the fact that you can't repair your device anymore, because if the manufacturer themselves aren't going to offer repair services and don't have tools and jigs and protocols in place to repair devices, to repair your screen to your iPad, if that's a factory only thing, sure, we'll sell you the screen. It ain't going to work right, but we'll sell it to you.
Yeah, I mean, this also could be in the move of that they'll supply support for a minimal time of older products, but then they're going to develop all of their newer products to move toward a way, you know, to where technically they don't have to repair it. Or, yeah, it is almost cost effective to just sell you a new phone.
Yeah.
So therefore, yeah, screw it. Whatever. We don't care.
Apple used to, in their Genius Bar, back in what I call Apple's heyday of customer service and everything else, back in, you know, 2008 through 2012, their Apple Genius Bar would replace iPhone screens in the back of their facility. So you'd walk into an Apple store, you'd say, "Hey, I broke my phone." They go, "Okay, it'll be 45 minutes." And you'd walk out with a fully functional phone with a new screen on your old phone. But somewhere along the way, they said, it's not labor effective to do this. We're just going to recycle things that come in and sell used ones as repaired units. So business as usual continues. That's my worry.
Yeah, I mean, they could basically
call me a cynic, but I've seen this song and dance before.
Yeah, I mean, what they could even eventually end up doing is basically integrating so many parts, saying, "Oh no, it's all one thing," or, you know, three or four items. The screen breaks. Well, no, actually, because the screen's broken, the whole thing is broken. So therefore, the whole thing has to be replaced, and they could claim that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's it's verbiage. That's all it really is. It's how they claim parts are manufactured, assembled,
mm-hmm.
put, and then sold to you. And once you buy that, you then, you know, and sign up for a product, say it is a phone, then you sign a guarantee of whatever that million pages of something is. For all you have to do is hide some little disclosure in there. This is a item is one solid piece or whatever.
Right. There's tons of examples.
Dumb verbiage.
Yeah. There's tons of examples of subverting right to repair action in the automotive industry. I mean, the automotive industry has one of the strongest right to repair set of laws on the books, because you can't void a warranty on a car because you put different tires on it. You can't void a warranty because you replaced the battery. Although with electric cars, who knows? But the idea of repair has gone away because a lot of automakers, electronics makers, device makers, OEMs have figured out, well, it's labor and skill intensive to train someone how to repair something, because you can break any item a million different ways. And each repair is going to be just a little bit different. Versus, if we allow 6 bolts to come out of the battery radiator on a Tesla, and instead of repairing the radiator, we simply state you have to replace the entire radiator and electronic housing and wiring harness as one unit, we don't have to only charge $1,500 for that repair. Now we can charge someone $20,000 for that repair.
Yeah.
And make back the cost of not only selling them the item, but easier labor that can charge higher because it's a larger thing being done. That's why we don't have right to repair anymore. Now, I'm bringing up Tesla and I'm bringing up a battery radiator or a battery cooling module because Rich Rebuilds actually did a video on that particular issue where someone in a Tesla Model 3 ran over a speed bump or hit something on the road, something low hanging on the road, and it broke the nipple off the radiator for the battery packs. And his Tesla shut down and refused to move. Tesla wanted like $15,000 to replace that radiator and the whole assembly that goes along with it. It's an aluminum radiator. So they took it to Rich's shop, and he welded on a new bung for it, refilled and flushed the system, and the customer was into it like $900.
That's fine.
Yeah. But
Tesla
doesn't want to hire welders. They don't want the liability of, oh, what if the repair fails down the road or anything like that? Because if it fails down the road, then we can't charge for the labor when it comes back in. You know, it's better for us all around economically if we just don't do repairs. Guess what? Same story for Apple. Same story for HP. Yeah. Same story for Microsoft. Same story for literally anyone who makes anything anywhere. Call me a cynic. But this is not going to solve the problem. And in fact, this might have just cemented that the problem stays a problem. And I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it does sneak, like you're saying, it's car parts, it's electronic parts, or cell phones and laptops, basically everything electronic. It is getting to the point to where it is. Digital integration of things is always nice, but the fact that now tinkerers, you know, you and I especially, and most of the all the hosts and a lot of people on here probably grew up tearing things apart when we were younger. How does this thing work? Let's build it back together. Oh, let's build it with this extra part. So now I improved my own thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and we learned how to replace laptop screens and monitor screens and whatnot to be able to fix it ourselves on the fly or work on our own cars. And there goes my keyboard. So I'm going to have to work on that. But the more and more things are getting integrated with all these stupid digital things, it's gonna be harder and harder. And yeah, it's dumb to where it gets to the point of like, well, I mean, certain things are nice, like electric cars and stuff, but man, if they're gonna charge you $15,000 to fix a radiator, well, what if you don't? That car is just gonna sit. What are you gonna do? You trade it in. The guy's gonna say, well, I'm not trading that in. It's gonna cost me $15,000 to go and fix this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so that, and I'm sure it's not just Tesla. I'm betting it's probably every electric car for every major company has something similar to that. And if it gets into, as it's looking like, PCs and cell phones, it's going to be basically you drop something, you break it. Well, you're going to go have to buy a new one. And probably what it's going to be is you're not going to buy it anymore. It's everything's on lease. You know, you're just paying a monthly fee now. And you're going to get you'll just have the latest and greatest. Oh, you broke it and your contract's not up to get a new one. Okay, we're going to charge you an extra $10 a month now because, you know, that you did the oopsie. So now buy the safety case.
Yep.
You know,
all that stupid stuff. As Michael points out, the word you're looking for is subscription.
Yes.
And I've talked about this practice before about how there was a noticeable shift right around the time the pandemic started of companies wanting to get away. And actually, it started well before that with Adobe and a couple other major players going this route. But wanting to go away from perpetual licensure. That is, you buy something once and you own it to a subscription-based model where you pay a much smaller fee, but every month for access to said thing. Every single streaming service, every company that was publicly traded between 2020 and 2023 has tried to come out with a subscription model of some kind to get recurring, predictable revenue sources. And it's because they were tired of slowly or in bursts fulfilling their promise to shareholders to raise money and everything else, to you know, it'd be a lot better if we could just say we're going to grow 1.5% month over month because here's our subscriber base. So that's what they did, which is why you have Mercedes and BMW with heated seat subscriptions. It's why you have Toyota selling remote start as a subscription option, and every car is now equipped with it. It's why you have Tesla selling subscriptions for supercharging and for they've been looking into this for self-driving and other items as well. Instead of paying $10,000 up front, you just pay $100 a month. And then you're not a one-time recurring customer, or you're not just a one-time customer then, you're a recurring monthly customer. Yeah. this happened across the board with so many different services. Amazon, for years, has tried to push item subscriptions. So you buy your laundry soap, and they sell you enough soap for 1 month, and then every month you get charged, and then your monthly delivery arrives with your dishwasher soap and your laundry soap and your sponges and things like that. And they go, you're going to buy this anyway. Like, we've already figured out how much you buy. So we'll just send you this every quarter and we'll just automatically charge you for it. Every company tried this. And every company wants to do this because it's sustainable and it's predictable.
Yeah, and the problem is there's enough people doing it that it they find it cost effective, and therefore they will like are refusing, or that allows them to not go to your local grocery store or grocery stores in general, causing more commerce. You know, there's the counter side checkout stuff, all these little knickknacks that you walk anytime you go into a grocery store or a store, you end up with your list, you end up walking out with like five or six more things. But that's income in someone else's pocket. That could have been a little mom and pop shop or something like that. That could have been that grocery store that is owned locally by someone. They're trying to buy all those places out. It's more convenient if you're just on a subscription basis. And then at the same time, too, they know you're probably going to forget it, because how many products now are coming out saying, hey, we're going to save you money by looking into all your subscriptions, and how many times you're double dipping on that, you know? It's gotten so bad that people are making money off of helping people unsubscribe to it.
Yes. Yeah.
Which there that in itself is a subscription based
item. There are subscription services for unsubscribing to crap that you subscribe to too often. And then there's also subscription services to protect your identity from all your subscription services.
Yeah. Jeez.
I don't know what a post-capitalist society looks like, but freaking hell, it seems like I'm staring right down the gullet of it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Is this the right time to
talk about
to plug my sponsor, which is technically a subscription for cloud services?
Yeah.
Guys, I'm sorry about this, but you've known me long enough and you knew this was you knew my stance and you support me anyway, and I freaking love you. Today's video is brought to you by Linode. Hosting your own server also means you get to host all your own problems. Even the most skilled network engineer will tell you you should decentralize your network. So why not host your services with Linode? If it runs on Linux, it'll run on Linode. That includes software for most of the tutorials you find on my channel, like how to run your own ad blocking, recursive DNS servers, VPN gateways, your own cloud-based Plex servers, and more. Which, by the way, are all subscription services that you could pay for elsewhere. You can host them yourself. They offer shared CPU plans for as little as $5 per month and can scale as high as your needs go, whether it be virtualized hosting, dedicated enterprise GPUs, or NVMe block storage. Even if you do host your own servers, you can use Linode to keep a backup off-site. Because remember, RAID is not a backup. Linode is also expanding at light speed, with 12 new global data centers planned before the end of the calendar year. Visit Linode.com/craftcomputing and get a $100 60-day credit just for signing up for a new account. Again, that's Linode.com/craftcomputing, and a huge thanks to Linode for putting up with sometimes when I have the worst segue ever. Thank you, Linode. Oh, God, that was perfect. I went, oh, it's 6:35. I better segue to our sponsor. Oh crap, we've been crapping all over subscription services. Oops. Yeah, remember to like and subscribe. Oh man, that was funny. So how is your autumn
spiced cider?
Yes.
Tastes like your typical pumpkin spice. I mean, it's nice. It's well balanced. If you like this type of stuff, it's great. I like it. It's a little bit different than beer, so I'm kind of like, oh, this is a nice little change of pace for me. Especially just been so heavy on IPAs recently.
It's fresh hop season, man.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was driving by this weekend and by a hop truck, and just this huge thing just fell, and I was like, in the back of my head, I was like, I could stop and put that in my car. But I was driving my wife's car. I was like, but she'll kill me for the smell.
Right. There was one time that happened to me as well. And I was driving my 350Z convertible, and I'm like, oh, I'm not putting a bushel of hops in my trunk.
And it just fly out the back.
Right. Like I can't put it in the cab with me because the top is down and I'm just going to lose it, just like the last guy did. And I'm not going to put this in the trunk.
Yep. Oh, I know. If anyone's ever picked fresh hops or anything, the oily and greasiness, your hands just get sticky. Now imagine all of that resin on your upholstery.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, it smells great. It smells fantastic. I mean, just like we were saying last week. when we were at doing live at the brewery, they were brewing. Mm-hmm. I believe it was a fresh hop beer, right?
Yeah, they did a fresh hop IPA. Yeah.
I think everyone, and I was late, and then I came in. I was like, God, it smells good in here.
every employee that we talked to went, I have to apologize. The smell's a little intense today. And I went, no, don't apologize for that. That's amazing. Okay, Novella is digging into beer number 2, Insight Brewing Team Building Exercise Triple IPA, 10.1%.
Wait, what? We still never figured out what number 1 was.
Yeah, Novella, I don't want to scroll up. What was your first beer of the night? Because you said, are you challenging me? Are you a challenger, sir? Yes, I was. And while we're doing that...
Go ahead.
So, Bell's Two-Hearted Ale, Bell's Brewery out of Michigan, rated the best IPA in the U.S.
Yes.
I'm gonna be kind, because I know there's a lot of Bell's fans here. I know there's a couple people who are drinking it right now. It's like Founders took their all-day IPA and made it Imperial. It's a good beer. It's a good beer. It's a very solid IPA. Okay. There's no evolution in the flavor whatsoever. It's a two-hearted beer. It feels like a one-trick pony, though. It's very thick. I mean that in like the flavor profile, not necessarily like mouthfeel. I was getting to that. The flavor itself is very fat. It hits your tongue. And what I like about IPAs is some of the roller coaster that you go on, because there's 20 different styles of IPAs. There's Northwest, there's Citrus, there's Hazy, there's this, there's that. Most of the different variants will go on a bit of a roller coaster. They'll start out super citrusy and pineapple and guava, and then they'll dive into that hop flavor and give you this super rich, bold, you know, bulk of that body. And then some of them leave you super dry back end. Others have that resiny, sticky, savory, hop thing that a lot of people like. Some of them are super hop oily forward. You've got your sticky hands, your dank dust, your IPAs like that are super big hops on the front, but then maybe dry out towards the end, or the citrus attack hits on the end, and so you've got kind of that uphill climb towards the end. This one hits at like 40% and is just flatlined right there. It's not a bad flavor. It's actually a very good hop flavor, but it doesn't do anything. The flavor you get at the beginning is exactly the same as the flavor you get on the end. There's no evolution, and there's no complexity that takes you on any kind of journey.
What was the Ninkasi that you got? Velociraptor?
Eclipsosaurus.
Eclipsosaurus. I'm curious because Two-Hearted. So what is rated the reason we're saying it's the rated the highest is because it's the Home Brewers Association, the people that most down to earth as far as craft brewers are concerned. Like, the Home Brewers Association is usually one of the highest honors you get. They're the ones that rated it that high. But my thought is Untappd, and I was looking at it, and that's more the consumer side of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of wondering what the comparison, because Two-Hearted gets a very respectable 3.95.
I was gonna say, I think it's 3.9. It's up there.
3.95, over 500,000 check-ins. Mm-hmm. And that's usually people only doing it one time.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my thought on Two-Hearted is it's a good beer. Like, I don't necessarily have anything against it. And if I'm at a barbecue or a friend's house, or I open a random fridge and a Bell's Two-Hearted is in there, it's a solid IPA. I'll gladly drink a Two-Hearted. Is it the best IPA in the world? I have some strong words against that.
Well, I think when they talk about it being the best, I think they're saying it's the best well-rounded. And I believe that's what they're going for. It's the best well-rounded. My phrase is barbecue beer. You're at the barbecue, that's the one everyone, majority of people will be happy to have and go to and buy.
I think you're right to a certain extent there. How do I put this kindly? Michael says, like, Budweiser is the king of beers. Budweiser's and actually Bud Light is the number one selling beer in the country.
Modelo now.
Oh, Modelo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forgot the whole controversy.
Yeah, no, I don't want to get into it.
we can't let people live lives. I forgot. Is she happy? I think she's happy. Cool. Let's let her be happy. That's awesome. And guess what? She's a person. Cool. God, what have I done?
King of beers.
Yes, king of beers.
Because you're the king of beers.
A lot of the best-selling beers in the country follow this recipe. I don't mean this beer recipe. This is an IPA. You've got American Pilsners, American Lagers, you've got Modelo, you've got Mexican Lagers, you've got all kinds of, you've got Cervezas, you've got whatever. One flavor, not too intense, good enough flavor, let's hold.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. But at the end of the day, it's probably drinkable to, like, everyone. And so, is it the best? No. Is it one of the most favorable as far as, like, anyone who wants to try an IPA, try this IPA, and it'll tell you if you like IPAs? Yes. If you like IPAs, you like this beer. It's unremarkable. It doesn't make you think. It's got some hops, a little bit of malt. That's it. Like I said, it's not bad.
No, it's not bad. Like I went and bought the Bell's Two Hearted Variety Pack, and I actually liked the cold IPA, which is a lager-based IPA style IPA. Yeah. Out of the best, I thought that actually had similar flavor profile to what you're talking about, the roller coaster, you know, type deal of it started off X here, the malt profile brought you over here, and then it all came together, you know, 2 seconds later and brought you to a different destination. And that's, I like those type of beers.
Right.
And then as it's warming up, it's a completely different beer, you know, halfway through to where I don't like it's not to say I don't like it. It's just not my cup of tea for beers where it's a solid flavor. And then it's just a warmer version of that flavor.
Yeah.
You know, later on, that's how I get Two Hearted Ale is just, hey, here's this flavor, and that's what it tastes like the whole entire way. But that's the thing, though. Consistency is very good, too.
Yep.
That's another thing, you know. That I think, is the Budweiser effect type deal of,
yeah,
you're going to the bar, you're going to a barbecue, you're going to, you know what Two Hearted is going to taste like. You know it's at every bar probably all over the place, and that's the IPA. You're like, I want an IPA. Okay, I know that's a good solid IPA. I probably know what I'm gonna get from that keg and what it tastes like, instead of an experimental craft brew that I don't know anything about and it's gonna ruin my food. Two Hearted Ales, please.
So I just looked something up.
All right.
And I love getting comments that I didn't read a single comment like this in chat because you guys are awesome. But I love getting comments about how I know nothing. It's funny enough when it's about tech. It's even funnier when it's about beer. Okay. So
wait, this wasn't in chat somewhere else?
This was not in, yeah. I've received comments for like my beer reviews going like, you're so stupid. I loved that beer. And I was like, cool. You can love that beer. I didn't like it. And here's empirical reasoning for why I didn't like it.
Hence a review
and a personal preference and taste. Yeah. And but by the way, I also do know what I'm talking about. So I called this a one-trick pony earlier, okay, because it's 40%, it's turning the volume up to 4 and just kind of leaving it there, and there's no evolution and there's nothing like that. Usually that's from a single hop beer. It is a lot of times when I see that it's a single hop and it's a simple malt. Okay, so I went, I wonder if this is a single hop beer. So I looked it up. Bell's Two Hearted is brewed exclusively with 100% Centennial hops. Centennial, known as a very mid-range, you know, you know, thick-bodied, but not resiny, but also not citrusy. Not this, but not that. It's like, it's right in the middle.
It's your middle ground hop. It's what everyone starts with an IPA.
Right. So I looked up Centennial hops just on a whim. Centennial hops, grown in Washington. Variety started being released in 1990. It quickly developed the nickname Super Cascade for its vibrant citrus and soft pine characteristics. Centennial is the featured hop in legendary IPAs such as Russian River's Pliny the Elder, which I've had similar words for, Founder's Centennial IPA, Founder's All Day IPA, and Bell's Two Hearted Ale. What else did I call this? An imperial version of All Day IPA.
Yep.
No. I know what I'm talking about.
The Honda Centennial hops, the Honda Accord of hops. That is so true. It is. You want to make a decent IPA? Centennial
hops, right?
I mean, the modern equivalent is Citra and Mosaic,
right?
You know, the new version. So you want to make a good IPA? Citra Mosaic,
mm-hmm.
And then you're like, I want to make a Northwest and Centennial.
Yeah,
boom. You know. Now I can call this a Northwest IPA.
No, I thought doing Northwest was like Idaho 7.
Well, that's a newer technical IP hop. So with Centennial, like you said, it was released later on, or yes, a 1990. While ago.
Yeah,
and Citra, I believe, was mid-2000s, Mosaic a few years later. Yeah. So those have, the Idaho 7 came out less than 10 years ago.
Yeah,
so
it's like 2015, 2017 maybe even.
Yeah, so yeah. Relatively new.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I don't like Idaho 7. If it's used correctly, which I don't think it ever is,
right.
Very like 2 out of 20 beers I've had used it perfectly.
Yeah,
in my opinion. So
Idaho 7 is if I remember, it's very dry, and
it's I get dry and dirty.
Yeah, it tastes like dirt, and if you use too much in the ratio, you end up with what honestly tastes like a Kansas IPA.
Yeah.
I love
2015.
That. Yep. Yeah.
And from
sorry. All day IPA used Amarillo and Simcoe. It was the Centennial IPA that used
Centennial.
But still. So Simcoe's an Oregon hop. Amarillo is a Washington hop. I didn't. So was it a month ago? No, crap. It was like 3 weeks ago. I was in Nova Scotia for the 45 Drives Creator Conference. And that was a heck of a time. I got off a plane after like 27 hours of traveling and then, or 27 hours awake and then did a show. No, it was like almost 40 hours awake because I woke up at like 5 in the morning and then left at 10 p.m. and then didn't sleep and then had my plane delayed 5 hours after a 5-hour layover and then finally landed at like 5 p.m., did the show. So, 36 or 40 hours awake. They presented me with some local brews, and I went, I always love tasting beers from other places in the country that are brewed with nothing but Oregon hops.
So you're like, oh, this tastes just like home.
Yeah.
Or what they wish home tasted. What they think my place tastes like.
Right. The beers were fantastic over there. Like, I have no complaints, no notes. Like, they were just good. Breton Brewery was probably the one I had most. I think I had 6 or 8 different beers from them. Really solid. Anyway, we need to move on because we've got 4 more stories to get to. I think we spent enough time on Right to Repair and then enough time on reviewing Bell's Two Hearted. I'm going to finish this up real quick and then we will get on to the next beer. But Apple, speaking of cider, Apple finally put USB-C in the new iPhone. And right. And I will say, I have an opinion on this as well. And John, you actually shared the story in chat or in our Discord about USB-C. And we now know why it's limited to a 23-year-old USB 2.0 standard. And it's because USB 2.0 is the only USB bus that was found on the Apple Silicon that was used in the phone. Now, the iPhone 15 does include USB-C with a 3.0 controller. However,
15 Pro.
The 15 includes a USB-C port, but with a 2.0 controller, which is limited to 480 megabit per second, as was the 2001 standard. Okay. I'm just going to say it. What the hell are you doing on your phone that you need more transfer speed than that?
Well,
why is this a problem?
Well, actually, my thought problem was that transferring like large backup files, and if you're not constantly backing up your files to like a cloud-based item, which Apple does, but if you are backing up like say a movie and you're wanting to transfer your files, there's that. I believe, doesn't this also affect your charge rate as well?
No, because your controller has nothing to do with charge circuitry.
Okay.
the controller is for data only. And the iPhone 15 base model will still charge at
I think it's 20 watts
at 20 watt, and it says slower than the common 25 watt charging used on Android phones, but that's just a negotiation thing. It's because Apple prefers 20 watt. So they will be offering a 20 watt USB-C charger. But yeah, I mean, look, scroll down a little bit here. USB 2.0 up to 480 megabit per second. USB-C yeah. connector. $800 smartphone. Look, I partially agree with the, it's ridiculous that it's only 2.0. Apple took away your headphone jack, and you Apple fanboys are totally on board with AirPods all of a sudden. Why aren't you using Wi-Fi? Why aren't you using AirDrop? Why aren't you using the litany and dozens of other tools that will wirelessly transfer your data to something else? We know even over 3.0 speeds, Wi-Fi 6 can be faster using AirDrop.
Well, it's if you have Wi-Fi 6. I mean, that's if you're in the, like, if you're in the middle of somewhere, that's the thing. You don't know. You could be somewhere that doesn't have Wi-Fi 6.
Right.
I mean, I guess too, for me, it is also the idea of visually seeing something that it, when it's claiming to be USB 3.0, it's not US, technically
when,
USB 3.0.
When you 3.0. See C, you're assuming 3.0.
You're seeing C, yeah. When you see, okay. That's what I meant. When you see C, you're assuming 3.0 or higher, but you're like, well, no, it's not. This is similar to, in my opinion, going to wish.com and being like 250 megabit or you know, two terabyte SD card. It's, oh, no, sorry, 250 megabit SD card.
Right.
You forgot to read the fine print. It looks the same, but it's not.
Yeah.
Do you need it? No, but I just don't like, I don't know. So, whatever. I dropped it in there just as like, oh, it's an interesting story.
Okay.
Plus, we also didn't have a whole lot of time when I dropped it in there.
Yeah. USB-C actually has official implementation going back to USB 2.0, the original standards, not even the revised standards, according to Wikipedia. So just because you see USB-C doesn't mean 3.0 speeds, doesn't mean fast charging, doesn't mean power negotiation, simply means it has to follow a set of specs, and those set of specs can be anything from the base specifications of USB 2.0 all the way up to USB 4, Thunderbolt 4, etc. This port supports everything from 2001 to 2023 and everything in between. Now, there is certain labeling that should go on things like your, gosh, where was that? There's a whole port labeling section. Yeah, your 40 gig, super speed, plus plus, your this, your that. But it doesn't have to. Yeah, here's the, technically the logos that should be above USB-A ports that support these particular speeds and whatnot. And also as far as powering goes, it can support everything from 5 volt at half a watt up to 48 volts at 240 watts, USB 3.1 type C, or good Lord, whatever the hell the specification is. USB-C supports all of that.
Yeah.
Officially.
Officially. I like I said, it, sure, that's what the model is. I'm just saying, most of the standard consumer, when nowadays, if they saw USB-C, they would equate it to 3.0 or higher. I understand that there is, that technically you don't have to because it supports something way less. I don't know. Just,
right.
You know, and sure, most users probably won't care, won't notice. I don't know though, because the whole reason they're doing that, they had to do this was the European law that passed,
right?
Or was it
It was the EU that passed a mandate that says any phone made after such and such date has to be USB-C charging compatible.
Yeah.
Which I believe goes into full effect next year, like late next year. Which the iPhone would be still sold as new during that time.
Yeah.
I believe it was Q4 2024 or something like that. We looked this up last night, since Vince, cheap Android phones are also USB-C or USB 2.0 C plug. Right. A lot of webcams are USB-C 2.0. If they're 1080 30 cameras, a lot of audio gear, like my Focusrite Scarlett, I guarantee this is USB-C, but 2.0 on the back end, because it doesn't need that much bandwidth. And should an $800 smartphone come with a USB 3.0 controller? Sure, maybe. But there's a lot of other USB-C devices out there that are 2.0 standards that we don't give a crap about, including devices like portable game consoles, your Anbernix and your Ein Odins and things like that, that don't even support fast charging, can't use a USB-C charger that's not dumb by default. So if it has to negotiate a charging rate, just won't charge the device. You have no idea how many times I've ran into that. Yeah. Look, I understand everyone wants to outrage at Apple cutting corners and, you know, arbitrary limits and things like that. If you guys didn't buy the headphone jack, hook, line, sinker, and everyone bought AirPods all of a sudden, I'd buy that you actually give a crap about the USB 2.0 interface on the iPhone 15 base model.
But yeah, dude, I'm not giving up my headphone jack.
When's the last time you plugged your iPhone into a PC in the first damn place?
Well,
Let's start there.
I don't have an iPhone, but I plug my Android into my PC all the time.
To do what?
I use their DeX controller. It's fun.
Okay.
The DeX PC. I use that as a DeX desktop. And so instead of texting, I'll be on my keyboard. So it's a lot faster.
There you go. Okay.
So I use it for that. And it has a headphone jack, which I've used before.
Yep.
Because there's been plenty of time that I've either forgotten a headphone, my earpods or something, and my in-laws don't have any of that stuff, and they just have a regular set of headphones. Oh, all right, I got it. It's cool. Pop it in. I got headphones. I have that option.
Yeah.
So, but I don't have an iPhone where there isn't. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I like having options.
TrickLogic over on the Discord says ProRes photo and video. I guess, or in my case, 4K 60 webcam replacement. I get that to some extent, but that also so feels like a niche use case.
Well, don't they advertise that their cameras are the best and you can film movies on it?
Well, yeah, because they got ProRes, and actually they just got AV1 encoding in the 15 Pro. The 15 Pro has an AV1 encoder built in. Yeah, I felt Epos Fox's head explode from here. at least I hope that was his head exploding.
Pants.
Yeah, one of my cases, 4K 60 webcam replacement. Yeah, like I get that, but these use cases are so few and far between for why you would actually need 3.0 transfer speeds, that part of me is just going, is it really that big of a deal? The headphone jack to me is a way bigger deal still.
I'll go with that.
Right. So does anyone really care about this, or is it just an easy way to get a sensational headline?
Probably both. I mean, there's probably enough people to rah-rah about it, and hey, free article to talk about. There we go. I put in my article.
But guess what? Article for the week. As Apple goes, okay, this will be the only USB-C supporting USB 2.0 device ever made by Apple, because the old Pro models, the old Pro and Max models, filter their way down in the next generation to the base model on Apple Silicon, which means that the next generation base model iPhone that comes out in 2024 is going to be the 15.4 or the 15 Pro processor, or at least the specs from the 15 Pro processor, which include USB 3.0. So unless you're buying the base model today, it doesn't matter and never will matter. Cool. TrickLogic points out, also, I'm on your Discord. Niche is our motto. You're not wrong. Using things in ways for which they were never designed. Adam Savage is my spirit animal, and it's because of like mottos like that. Like using tools and equipment in ways that in which they were never designed is kind of how I approach PC building at times. It's certainly how I approach servers for a long time. And still in some like weird projects that I get into, it's like, yeah, let's game on some NVIDIA Tesla cards. Like, let's make that happen. So I get that niche is in my DNA and a lot of my audience's DNA. But there's also the pragmatist in me that says, does this actually mean anything? And he says no.
Well, wait, hang on a second. I have a thought here. It's something Skull kind of brought up, but I'm going to twist it because it's about what I was going to say to him.
I need another beer. So.
All right. Well, as long as you can hear me.
I cannot because I have to take my headphone.
Well, lame. But I will then give it to the audience and they can see if they think it's
see if
a
you
thing.
Can summarize in like 6 seconds when I return. I just have to turn
All right. On, so. All right. So my thought is, though, every time Apple does this, they always... So Skull sat there and says, featured upgrade for the next model for the iPhone 16 Pro. Something I always notice is a lot of people that complain about their cell phones or debate between Android and Apple is that, well, Android already had that feature, but Apple perfected it. Now, will this also now be another feature that Apple will then claim is part of the 16 Pro? We've upgraded the speed of our transfer of USB from 2.0 or this speed to X speed, making it even faster for you. Now, is that another reason they might use this or say this? I don't know. Basically, I was saying, are they going to then claim now that in the 16, they basically just doubled their USB speed? And say that it's an innovation of theirs.
Oh, no, it's a great way to say it's 10x as fast as the previous
exactly,
model.
Exactly, exactly.
Because it's 5 gigabit versus 480.
We innovated it, but then every Android user will say, no, this was already been a thing for years now. We've had it. They just rebranded it as something else to claim something. It's dumb.
So, John, I have a question for you. Okay. So I've got two beers here.
Yeah.
I've got the Eclipsosaurus. Eclipsosaurus. 7.2% ABV. Okay. This one's not quite as readily available. This one is a seasonal brew. Should I go with the Velocihopter, which is a year-round brew, 6.6%?
I was going to say it's a whole percentage less.
It's half a percent less. It's 0.6. But they're both within the ballpark. Yeah. I mean,
they are with technically. Yes. Okay. Here's actually what I would go with. I would actually go with the Velocihopter.
That's what I was thinking.
Because the Eclipsosaurus is classified as a hazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you have the Velocihopter is an American IPA. Two Hearted Ales is classified as an American
IPA. IPA. Correct.
So
that was my other thought. And like I said, this one's still in the ballpark. I've also got a Widmer Deadlift in there, but that's an 8.8.
I was going to say, that's Imperial.
It's too much. That's going over. So yeah. I wanted to keep it fair. Okay.
So you go get that.
Pour
that. I will get my name cop.
Cosworth says, just do the Megalodon. Yes.
Speaking of. That is what I will be doing. But in their new packaging.
Which is just... Are you doing the... Is that the Megalodon?
Yeah, so it says Megalodon on the back, right?
That is so disappointing. God, that right? Can art was so badass.
I know. Well, you know what they might do is keep it for the tall boys.
Right.
And because I've never seen the Megalodon in a 12 ounce.
I've never seen that either. I've seen them in 16s, 19s, and bombers.
Yeah. And so maybe.
All right. So here's our Velocihopter. They technically call it a Guardian IPA. But it's an American IPA for those playing the home game. And just to be fair,
same glass.
It is the same glass. This is technically a juicy IPA.
It says American, whatever.
Yeah.
Those classifications are dumb.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good beer.
Okay, I'm looking for the hops used because I want to.
Oh, I got it.
You got it?
Yeah. Do you want them or do you
want
them?
Oh, here we go.
It's
Nugget,
on their website.
Nugget, Azaka, Brew One, Lotus, and Mosaic.
Yep.
So, a wide range. And if you want that Northwest little extra something, it's Mosaic.
Oh, yeah. Well, that Nugget's also very bittering,
yeah.
Too. So, that's the nice part is you put Nugget and Mosaic together, you get bittering and bright, juicy mango papaya, you know, citrus notes type things. It's very good.
You get that roller coaster that I mentioned.
Yeah. Well, again, Ninkasi, Northwest Brewery, that's the type of beers Oregon is known for.
First sip and there's no contest.
Complexity.
Just how much more complex this beer is. And let me be clear, complexity is not an instant win. Okay? Complexity with good flavors is difficult. Complexity that makes sense is difficult. What you don't want to do is randomly change flavor halfway through and leave the person going, ooh, I kind of like, what the f- was that?
Yep. Yep.
So many beers will do that. Yeah. And so having it be a ride that you'd want to get on again takes some skill. This one, super bright. Up front, super, super bright. This one, I will say, starts high. And comes down to that medium level. But it comes down to 40% volume. Where it starts at 80 and then levels off and then go like, I want to do that again.
Yeah. I always get that. Say it's that it wants you to reach back for more and sip again.
Right.
Because you want that ride because mm-hmm. it's so enjoyable. You got to keep going on the ride.
Longer swig did not diminish it one bit. It made it a little bit slower where we're kind of gliding down that hill.
Coated your tongue more.
Coated the tongue a little bit more. I am left, and I will say, not the clearest IPA I've ever seen. Like, I could have chosen better as far as if you wanted, like, a crisp, clean, you know, see-through, mm-hmm. translucent IPA. But this is definitely not a hazy. It doesn't have any hallmarks of the hazy, except maybe, and God, I think this beer predates a lot of the hazy craze. Like this beer is from like 2008, something
like
that.
I like to call them unfiltered. They're just
right.
Not filtered.
Correct.
It's
yeah,
not
this is
hazy,
an unfiltered IPA.
It's just unfiltered.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great descriptor of it. it predates a lot of the hazy craze, even going back further back than, you know, The Alchemist and Hetty Topper and whatnot. It leaves you with kind of, boy, how do I explain that? It's a very similar malt on the back end is what I'm left with to the Two Hearted IPA, where I'm about the same level of sweetness. I'm about the same level of hops and bitterness and everything else, but also with like some high pulp orange juice, if that makes any sense at all.
No.
Right. like it tastes like I up front is citrusy, it's bright, it's colorful, it tingles ever so slightly. A little citrusy, a little playful. And then it kind of transitions into this very bright but still malty flavor on the back. And like I said, intensity wise, it winds up about where Bell's Two Hearted is. But also, if I had taken like a really quick swig of orange juice after, where I've still got some of that citrus kind of sitting right on top there, and going, you want more of that. Take another drink, you want a little bit more of that. Like, that orange was really good. Get some more of that. I just don't think there's any contest. And this isn't even an award-winning beer from the West Coast. This is just like, this is just what we have.
Well, the thing is, though, I was going to propose, are we spoiled in that? This is our taste, but this is what our beers are here. So when we try a beer that doesn't have this complexity, it's not good. But then when someone said, I think it was a Novella or Skull said, you know, Budweiser is the king of beers, the most distributed. So it's a very bland rice lager. Mm-hmm. And then when you have Bell's introduced to them, that is a complex beer.
It is.
Because Budweiser isn't complex in comparison.
It's big. It's bold. It's 7%.
You know, it's a percent and a half bigger than Budweiser. And so, and it's readily available. So that could be why it's nationally the best IPA out there.
Yeah.
But here in Oregon, it's very subpar. You know, it is, it's nothing. It's who right. cares? This is, I know home brewers that make better beers than this. You know, and we know a lot of them who even open had beers, or started breweries. So, to where I think a comparison might be better for is Pliny the Elder. Maybe next time you do something like that, we have a Pliny the Elder and compare it to something here, because at least that's Northwest versus Northwest. You know, the grandfather of Northwest, or one of the grandfathers of Northwest IPAs.
Your Stone.
Yeah, versus or Stone, you know.
Sierra Nevada Pale,
Yeah.
I would even venture to say, like, I like Stone's IPA more than Bell's.
I would agree with that. I had it not too long ago, and I was like, I love that it's still a classic Northwest IPA. It's got a great malt body. It doesn't have the complexity of some of the Ninkasi stuff, because when it first came out, there weren't a lot of these tropical hops. It came out in like 96. But
right, yeah, it was a mid-90s IPA.
It was a mid-90s IPA, but it's still like, oh my gosh, the malt complexity is actually really impressive versus these new IPAs that are actually more hop complexity when they balance it with a yeast. But it's also nice to be like, oh, it's a nice change of pace, and I already have a palate to appreciate this type of stuff, you know, and it's wonderful. I totally get it. And that's where I think you and I can also see where Bell's, oh, I totally get where this is coming from. I appreciate it.
Right.
But I am so tainted by Oh, so much of this other stuff.
I am so freaking spoiled. Right.
Yeah, we are so spoiled and blessed to live in, you know, the hop mecca of the United States, and it's just like, God, come on, guys. Come on, you could do better. I could do better. Yeah. By mistake, I could do better than this.
Yeah, I believe by the numbers, Oregon produces 45% of the world hop supply, and Washington does another 15 by themselves. And yeah. So it's like 60% of the world's hops are grown here. The rest are grown in similar climates on the East Coast or down in Brazil and Argentina and you know, similar 45th.
Australia. Yeah,
Australia as well. You know, similar 45th parallel, but on the southern side of things.
I mean, there's a reason why when you go to like Europe or even Canada, mm-hmm. they're like, we want Northwest hops. If you're not making a lager, you're going to make a pale ale or an IPA, which are now over those areas becoming very popular. And what do? We want Oregon and Washington hops. That's all we want. And the problem is that they get it shipped to them and it's old. Mm-hmm. We get it fresh off the vine. You know,
my favorite story was when someone from Ireland contacted me and said, hey, do you have a P.O. box? Which I do have a P.O. box. It's in the video description if you want to know it. If you want to send us something, whatever that something may be, just keep in mind your local and international rules and regulations around shipping. Make sure you pack it well. But he goes, can I send you some local beers that I think you guys will just love? And I went, I know what shipping to Ireland is. Like it costs me $100 to ship a 3-pound package to Ireland once. Yeah. And he goes, no, I want to send you some beers. And I went, yeah, here's my P.O. box. Send away. So he sent me a 6-pack of beer, and I think it costs about $100 to ship it.
Oh, man.
The 6-pack, he goes, these are like some of the best IPAs that I've had. They're fantastic. I think you guys would absolutely. The hops were grown like 5 miles from me.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. It's so bad. My
bless his heart. He sent me beer from my backyard from the other side of the world.
Cost him $100. And he was like, oh, this is.
They were really good beers. Yeah. But it's like, oh my God, what are the odds of that? Like, so John, they grew them at Crosby Farms. Okay. Not only did they ship them from my backyard, we know the owners.
Yep. I went to high school with the owner.
Right.
It's like, I know the owner.
Those are their hops. And I went, holy crap, that's amazing.
That's funny. Yeah. No, my brother went to Greece or Italy one time, and he knew a lot about beer and the local brewery there, and he went to some tiny island. And this isn't my brother Steve, this is a different one. But the brewer was so impressed. He's like, oh, you're from the United States. You love beer. Oh, I just made this beer. It's the best beer we've ever made. And it goes in the back, you know, unlabeled, everything like that. Cracks open. It's just fresh. I made this with Willamette Valley hops. It just gives it to him. It's like, it's nothing. I grew up. It's like, I was born there. And then he drinks. It's like, yeah, it tasted horrible.
It's not even good.
Not even good. The hops are like, taste like a year old hop.
They were pellets.
That were like not frozen and just kept in a warm environment.
Yeah. I love that. In fact, another beer that I grabbed was some of the 10 barrel cryo hopped beers. And so I've got Cryo Stash in there. I've got Bubble Stash. But there's one that came out that's like 8.2%, and it's the Stash Bandicoot.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal juicy IPA. But one thing about 10 Barrel is they've been doing cryo hops, that is freeze-dried hops, in Bend, Oregon. They kind of pioneered the process of freeze drying while locking in everything that makes the hop taste like that. And in fact, the cryo freezing or the the freezing process even gives some hops a little bit of a unique flavor, but none of it's negative.
No, in fact, it the resin parts of it stay even higher.
Right.
That's the thing. So the cryo process is a pellet form, but then it's a special type of freeze drying, and that these pellets last longer, but it actually maintains a higher alpha acid than the actual hop or a standard pellet. So you're getting more of that true natural flavor. It's very interesting. Willamette Valley Hops, they have their own proprietary version of cryo, just like the Bend Place does. And so and then they even went with the hop jam, which is a gelled form.
Yeah,
of hop.
That's right.
So that's very interesting. So yeah, I love that Oregon. Again, you can get, I believe, a doctorate in brewing at Oregon State University.
Yes, you can.
And a lot of beer innovation is done here in Oregon that is adopted worldwide.
One of the community colleges near me also has a winery program. And in fact, their winery campus is like 4 or 5 miles from me. That they have a dedicated campus for studying wine and wine development. And it's right in the middle of Oregon wine country. It's like equidistant from like 6 or 7 different wineries in this area. Oregon does quite well in wine development as well. It's one of the things that people don't usually associate with Oregon, but we grow grapes with the best of them. So.
Oh yeah. Like the Oregon, and I want to say the Willamette Valley too, is, I read some stuff a couple of years ago competing with Napa Valley, California style of saying there's as good, if not better.
Yeah. Gosh, where is
it's the soil, and you know that's what they all the good
soil and water
great right. growers. It's the soil and water, and the Willamette Valley, the nutrients in the soil are very high, and that's where we get a lot of the big juicy hops and juicy grapes.
Hey guys, this is Heiko. By the way, good morning from Finland. Hello. Hey guys, have you tried the Finnish Lonkero? I have no idea what that is, but I'm equally intrigued. Tell me more. While you type out what is more, let's go ahead and jump on to the next story. Microsoft cuts ties with the Microsoft Surface Duo. That is the dual screen Android foldable tablet laptop all-in-one touch thing that
weird thing
was kind of a Microsoft Surface, but also not, after just 2 Android versions.
It was weird.
I kind of liked it. So
it's going to be on your show in about 6 months.
Right. Yeah. Now that they're on clearance, I might try to pick one up.
Gaming on your Windows Surface Duo.
Right.
What's it like?
Can I install Windows on this? Like,
probably not. If I remember correctly, it's a dual screen, but it's not a foldable.
It's a dual screen. Right. It's a clamshell dual screen.
Yeah, that's a good.
There you go. On its third birthday, the original Surface Duo is no longer supported by Microsoft. So the second it turns 3 years old, which, by the way, under California Right to Repair, they would have to provide at least security updates for 5 years for this device, not just 3. The device was released exactly 3 years ago on September 10th, running Android 10. Microsoft will no longer release OS or security updates for the device because, well, they don't have to. Yay.
I mean, the one cool thing is that yeah, there these will probably go on sale on the market very soon for cheap, because yeah, there's no more support from them, and there could be some really cool, fun things to do with them.
Totally.
Maybe, but it's a touch screen, so it's, from what I gather, I wasn't too into them, but it was essentially a tablet that you could use for reading or browsing, but then have all multiple windows. And then when you wanted to type on it, it's a touch keyboard
underneath, which, or you could use it in folio mode where you could open it up and have dual screen or have spread screen depending on the application and blah, 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 blah.
But because it's essentially two screens, you can't really, like, when you're gaming on it, it's the one screen. Isn't it 2 8-inches or something like that? It wasn't very big.
It's dual 8.1s. You are correct.
Yeah. So, so it's not like it's a big phone or a device, but.
Right. I've already got people sending me eBay links going, here, go buy one.
I mean, I guess it would be kind of cool. The specs seemed okay. I guess if you were looking for just a little handheld device you wanted to do something on to play with, maybe. If someone needed a tablet for Christmas one year and you're like, oh, this is used, yeah, you'll probably get it cheap and it's probably pretty good for the next 5 years. There's no updates for it, so that's good. You'll never have to update it.
Right.
What it is what it is.
Right.
You know?
You'll never have to... It was unpopular enough, I doubt it's ever going to get third-party bootloader support. So, it is what it is.
So, I wouldn't be surprised next year you'll find it eBay $120 somewhere.
Yeah.
So, if that's your jam in playing with this type of stuff, again, if I saw one for $60, I'd probably pick one up if it was that cheap.
Yeah, I said $200 or get out. The eBay link I was sent was like $365, and I'm like, no. Number one, I'm never spending a dime on Microsoft that even has $365 in the name or the price tag.
I know they came up.
But that's still too much for a tablet that's no longer supported.
Yeah, and if it only comes with 120 gig of memory, 6 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, it's not exactly a powerhouse either.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. If it's like $100 in a year, maybe next Christmas, that might be something as a fun tablet you could transform into for your kids that you can control over. Yeah. And if you can do like kids modes on something like that, that would be kind of cool, because then you don't need a case and they clamshell it closed. And that's kind of fun stuff. You know, who doesn't? I love to have something like that.
Right.
Then it also builds its own standing case. That's cool, because you can just fold it up. But other than that, you know.
Yeah.
Did it run Windows or Android?
Android.
Okay, so it was
shipped with Android 10. It just got Android 12 support. End of life. Yep.
Yeah, I would be curious if you could run Windows on this and how it would run.
There is Windows 11 for ARM. I'm not sure if it's at all supported on this device. Microsoft Surface Duo specs. Snapdragon 855, in theory, it may have Windows drivers. Because Snapdragon and Qualcomm are the exclusive provider of ARM hardware for Microsoft Windows. So maybe there's a way, maybe there will be a way, maybe eventually we'll find a way to get Windows ARM support on one of these devices. I think it'd be interesting at least to take a look at that point. Let's see. Novella, how far is Ninkasi shipped? It's gone up and down through the years. It used to be like very much just Washington, Oregon, California, and even then California was kind of like, yeah, maybe. I believe now Ninkasi, remember, was one of the main buy-ins for the Craft Brewers Association.
Yep.
CBA or whatever they called themselves. And I believe they got distribution out through Denver, possibly some of the Western Midwest. But I don't believe it ever went further than that. And I have no idea where it's at today.
Yeah. And I think even that deal recently within the last year or so got quashed. So
yeah,
like you said, the distribution has gone all over the place, but if you're Oregon, Washington, easily get it.
Yeah.
Southern California, maybe. And then, you know, your local, if you're anywhere else, maybe Idaho would probably be the first.
I did see Ninkasi in Nevada last time I was there. So there is some Las Vegas presence of that. Okay, but we're still talking Western time zone. Like, we haven't left anything major. if Windows doesn't run, I bet Linux will. Okay.
Yeah, and that second screen won't work.
Right. It won't rotate, and the keyboard doesn't pop up. But dang it, we got Linux.
Linux! Yeah. And it runs smooth.
As long as you only ever need the terminal window. Look, I love Linux as much as the next guy. I also fully understand the limitations of Linux, so... If you can give me a fully working Surface Duo running Linux, I will eat my hat if I was wearing one today. Unity. Let's talk about Unity. Unity, let's just say, pissed off a few people this week.
Yeah.
With some
rather... Talk about subscription-based bullcrap.
Right, with some rather abrupt changes in licensing fees. So Unity has a free license. You can use Unity as a development environment, as a 3D engine, as a game development platform, so long as your install base stayed below a certain threshold.
Personal usage.
I believe it was only revenue that used to count, and it used to be like $1 million in revenue. Well, they are changing that aspect of their terms of use. It's going from I'm quoting out of my butt here, but I seem to remember that Unity was free up to $1 million in revenue for a particular project. Now what they are saying is that once Unity hits $200,000, or once your project using Unity hits $200,000 in revenue or 200,000 downloads, Unity will be entitled to 20 cents per installation. Developers paying the $2,000 a year for Unity Pro Plan would have to hit higher thresholds and would be charged lower fees overall. Those have not been announced what those actually are. And the new fee system will begin at the start of 2024, so 3 months from now.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a controversial opinion.
Okay.
I'm going to say this sucks. Okay.
I don't think that's controversial.
I don't think that's controversial. I think this sucks. I also think this is going to be the subject of a number of lawsuits moving forward over the next year or two as projects are brought to fruition that might be in development, as terms of use of had changed, which, by the way, you only have to agree with the terms of use for using Unity when you first download the develop environment and start developing your project. That project may take 3 years to develop, which means I'm still operating under the original terms of use. So any developer, and by the way, I am not a lawyer, but any developer who downloaded the Unity development kit and the engine and development environment and everything else, if they were developing a project and it's still a year away from fruition or launch or any kind of retail revenue generating thing, they'd have a pretty good leg to stand on in court saying, look, we're not going to go back and redo this, but this is a vast change from what the fees were when we started. And I bet they'd win. because you can't just randomly change the terms of use like this and have it go into effect in 3 months.
Yeah, it might be per, well, they might update the policies and then say any project from here on out that you develop with this license, you have to update. We've updated our terms of use of license. Yeah.
Correct. The fee that they're charging, 20 cents per installation.
Define that.
Hold on. Here's where my controversial opinion comes in.
Okay.
Even at $15 retail sale. So I'm talking indie developers, I'm talking one-off teams, I'm talking things like that. If you make $200,000 at $15 per sale, we're talking 1.3% of your overall revenue. Now, in the past, you wouldn't be beholden to that 1.3% that you had to send there. But 1.3% is also not going to send you out of business.
No.
Go ahead.
So here was my thought, though, was knowing that you want to be a developer, because Unity is, in my opinion, was one of those things, just like Unreal. You download it for free. You learn to do these 3D effects. You learn to build games off of this engine because mm-hmm. it's a common engine. It's usable. It's free. We have all these tutorials out there for it.
Right.
You know, even I have downloaded Unity to just, I want to play with it. I want to see what the demos are. Let's have fun. I have Unity and I have Unreal Engine just to be like, hey, I built a game where I shoot a ball, you know, just because I thought that was fun. But my thought is you do that too. And someone who puts their game out there is also wanting to be like, I kind of want to get into gaming. I want to see if I can develop. I want to do this. And I don't want to make $200,000. I want to have a hit. And if another engine is going to give me no cost, I'll go and develop in that. I don't want to do, if I make $2 million, then whatever, you know, I got to pay Unity X amount. Mm-hmm. But if I do Unreal Engine 4, I don't have to pay a dime. Mm-hmm. I'm going to learn Unreal Engine 4. Thank you very much.
I get that. I think this is going to be controversial. The outrage is because of the terms of use in the middle of the use by developers, not because of what it would actually do to their revenue. It's 1.3%. You're going to lose more to inflation than you are to suddenly needing to pay Unity at $200,000 instead of $1 million. And that's at a $15 retail price. I know AAA games developers, they're like, whatever, it's a drop in the bucket. We were already paying that. We're already a member of their Unity Pro plan. We're already doing this. We're already doing that. Like, yeah, the people that this affect, it's 200,000 downloads and 200,000 in revenue. If you offer your game for free, you're not on the hook for it. If you offer your game for $5 and you get 200,000 downloads, congratulations, you made $1 million. 20 cents per install at 200,000? It's not very much money.
So
it's a rounding error.
Yeah, well, I know some of the thing that was controversial about it too was per install. That was a key term because
it's both. It's 200,000 and 200,000 in revenue.
Well, someone could download it and does an install count per device and say, I downloaded this, now it's on my PC, then I went to my Steam Deck, and then now it's on there too. That's two downloads,
mm-hmm.
but I only bought it once.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that count? How are they counting it?
That's going to be difficult for Unity to prove. And the onus is going to be on them to charge proper licensing. And so
what about bundle packs?
My thought on this is there's going to be a lot to be said for, if a game is released through Steam, for example,
yeah,
if a game is released through Steam, purchased through Steam, downloaded through Steam, and played through Steam, you can only run one copy of that game at a time. So it's going to be hard for Unity to say, well, he's installed it on seven different machines, like someone like me might do. But I can still only run one at a time, which means I'm still only on the hook for one license for that. Versus releasing a game on itch.io or something like that, where it's DRM free, there's no accountability, there's also no real bookkeeping on that side of things either. You have to go on the purchase number from itch.io. So Unity would say, how many itch.io downloads have you had? You count those as one, because it was downloaded once, or it was purchased once. It's going to be really difficult for Unity to prove anything otherwise for any of those scenarios. So I don't think that's as big of a deal as changing the agreement midway through. Let's be clear, Unity sucks here for changing the agreement midway through. But let's actually look at the monetary impact of changing that agreement and the real-world implications of that. If you sold a game for $15 and made $200,000, you're on the hook for...
Is that $200 a profit or is that $200 of sales?
Revenue is what they say.
Yeah, okay. So you didn't make $200,000.
Right.
You know, you had to, for all you know, if it is just you, sure, you might have made that, but probably not. So right. Now you're on the hook. You got to pay someone another grand plus, and that's another bill. All right, that just cut into our thing, you know.
Right.
So I think that's what people are complaining about. You know, again, if it was $1 million, that's $1 million. Take 1%.
The people this is going to hit the most is people who charge $1 for a game on itch.io and get 200,000 downloads, because at 200,000 they're on the hook for the full licensing fee of 20 cents per install. I'd like to know the last person that made 200,000 sales on itch.io. I'd like to shake their hand, because holy crap. You know, the platform is not that large. But again, 200,000 downloads and earn 200,000 in revenue. That's the threshold. It has to be both. Can't be one or the other. It has to be both. So if you charge $10 for a game or $15 for a game and you get 200,000 downloads, let's just do the math on that real quick. Let's say $15 per game times 200,000 downloads. That is $3 million in revenue. And you are on the hook for 200,000 times 0.2. That is $40,000. $40,000 divided by 3 million is 1.3% of your revenue. It's not a huge hit.
Well, thing is, though, that is the cost of an employee.
It's still $40,000. I'm not gonna shake that off.
I mean, that's still basically they are now once you hit that mark, Unity is an employee. He's a low-level employee.
Then you know what you do? You sign up for Unity Pro if you're at that level of development. You pay the $2,000 annual fee, and you get a 14-cent license.
Now, did they say 14? Because I didn't see that.
They didn't claim any number on the Pro licensure. I believe that's all behind smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, and also, does that...
It's a higher threshold, and it's a lower rate.
Wait, hang on, though.
So only...
Can you develop in the lower end tier midway, sign up for the higher tier?
I'm sure you could. I don't think there's anything.
But does that game, because it was developed, is it what? How does that license work?
The license is simply what your sales expectations are. It's not a different tool set. It's the same engine. It's the same.
So then, what?
Once
if I went to 190,000 downloads and 190,000 on revenue. Could I just go and spend $2,000, upgrade to the Pro, and be like, I don't have to pay Jack. I paid my $2,000. Now you get 14 cents.
Yeah.
Can someone do that for that game? Or can Unity state, no, we saw you built this with a license. It's been out for X amount of months or years.
No, because the tool, the Unity Pro license, I believe, simply comes with support for if you're trying to develop something specific for it, you can talk to developers or engine experts or things like that and get support for your development. It's the same tools.
Do you think this is just a bigger push with that knowledge or that idea? Could you say this is a bigger push to get people to go to the pro version because it'll save them money once they're about to reach that threshold?
Oh, I'm sure.
So they're going to say, like, oh, go to the pro version because look, you're a pro now. And yeah, just spend $2,000 and we're going to cut what you're going to owe me by, you know, 30-40%. Mm-hmm. And that $2,000 is going to save you $10,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Yeah. Look, it sucks to all of a sudden, when you didn't think you were going to be on the hook for licensing fees, be on the hook for licensing fees. I get that. I'd be pissed off too. Okay. The pragmatist in me, he keeps popping his dirty little freaking head up, goes, if you are ever subject to any of these thresholds that you meet, you're doing pretty well, and this becomes a rounding error. Okay. So, can we actually do the math on this? Has critical thinking gone away entirely? Can I bring a little nuance? Oh shit, no, I can't. Can I bring a voice of reason and say, look, I don't think Unity is going to be able to retroactively flip a switch, turn the page, and go like every single developer now owes us this amount of money. No, they can't, because if you downloaded a particular version of Unity and their development engine and all their programs and development stuff, you can't retroactively change that agreement. The agreement was made when I started developing the product that I'd be on the hook at $1 million or at 1 million downloads or whatever the threshold used to be. If I already started development, and in fact, if I already have copies out in the wild, I've already released everything and blah, 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 blah. Unity is going to be under some serious crap for you can't just change that. The onus is going to be on them for when the user license agreement was accepted. And changing the user license agreement for new downloads doesn't change it for old downloads and old agreements and old versions of their free version of this software. So, while the new fee system will begin in 2024, it's going to be a long time before Unity ever sees a freaking dime from this, if any lawyer for any corporation or any indie developer has anything to say about it. And I guarantee you, a lot of them will. Secondly, if you're doing well enough with selling your software that you make $200,000 in revenue and 200,000 individual downloads, even at $5 a game, you're at $1 million in revenue once you hit that 200,000 download mark. It's 1.3%.
So here's the flip side of my argument, which wasn't really an argument, just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Of, okay, Unity and Unreal, all these engines have revolutionized game development for the modern era, allowing
absolutely
an ease of game makers. And we have been blessed.
There are games built in Unity you would never guess were made in Unity.
Exactly. And someone, some kid, grabbed, downloaded Unity and gave you the best game ever. You know, that cost you $2.99, $5.99, $15, whatever. Unity is now saying, we've been giving this away for free for years. Mm-hmm. We have been developing new tools for years to make it even easier and better for you. We need a little extra back to continue to do this, to make it even better for you. And like you're saying, 1.4%. I'm sorry, it's the bare minimum, but that's what we feel, you know, that we need to charge.
Yep.
But that will allow us to continue to grow. We don't want, maybe from their end, it's like, we don't want to do this, but we have to continue to give you the benefits that we have been providing you for all these years, or else we will collapse and therefore you will lose the community that we have built up for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole other side to it.
I will say Unity has also clarified over the last couple of days some things that will not impact people, developers, companies, when it comes to game downloads. And like I already said, it's going to be really tough for Unity to say, well, this one Steam user installed it on 7 machines. Yeah. Yeah, but they can still only run it once, which is within the user license agreement for Steam, which means they still only installed it once. Install bombing. So angry users can just install it on as many machines as they want. I don't think that's going to be a thing because the onus is on Unity to prove that it's being run on multiple machines simultaneously. That the license isn't being transferred from machine to machine in between uses. Because yeah. Users still have rights. Number two, games offered for charity or included in charity bundles like Humble Bundle or things like that. Unity will provide a way for developers to inform Unity that their games are being offered in that way. Unity says, Witten says, as for Game Pass and other subscription services, Witten said that developers like AgriCrab, which is one of the people they were talking to in this Axios article, would not be on the hook as fees are charged to the distributors of the game, not to the developers in that case. So in this example, 200,000 downloads would be charged to Microsoft for Game Pass games, not to the developer. Now, whether or not those fees get passed along, that's another story entirely. Runtime fees will also not be charged for installations of game demos unless the demo is part of a download that includes the full game. Early access games will be charged for an installation, he noted. So you can't just release a game as early access and never release a full version and not be expected to be charged. Witten estimates that only around 10% of Unity's developers will wind up having to pay any fees given the thresholds the games need to hit. And that was exactly my
point,
you have to cross both thresholds, 200,000 in revenue and 200,000 downloads. 200,000 downloads, you're sitting on a good chunk of cash, and it's 1% of your earnings. That's not going to put you out of business. That's not going to change your business model. That's not going to dramatically alter the playing field for anyone in any business ever. If 1% is the difference between you being in business and you being out of business, you had a crappy business model to begin with.
Yeah.
End of rant.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, it's essentially going to be the low-end cost of an employee. But again, if it was the 200,000, the base, very baseline, yeah, you're talking a high probably electrical bill or of some kind. If it is the $1 million and it's a low-end person, you should be able to compensate that.
Right.
Is it an inconvenience? Sure, it can be an inconvenience if you hit that threshold. They're stating by their metrics, only 10% of their current users are hitting that metric. That's not a big deal. Again, it comes back to me thinking, hey, we just need this to continue to push the boundaries and give you all the benefits that we've been giving you throughout all these years. We do need a little extra help though from the community, you know? So I think there's a lot of give and take. There's a lot of backlash from this that is unwarranted and people just beating their chest because they want to get some likes on X or Twitter or whatever social media group you're on. In a year from now to 2 years from now, we'll actually see the actual impact and implications that this takes. Maybe Unity messed up, maybe not. Don't know, but it's going to be a while before we see this. Quite a while, actually, because 200,000 downloads, $200,000 for a lot of these games takes, it's not like a instant release. That's what they get. It's, no, someone developed this for 6 months because they're a single person, and they're going to be waiting 2 years to get 100,000 downloads, if they're lucky, you know, because it's some weird game.
Vince brings up a point that I hadn't considered, and that is free-to-play games with in-app purchases that may exceed 1 million downloads and then hit the 200,000 revenue mark for Unity.
That's an interesting, how would that work?
because all they have to do is pass 200,000 revenue and 200,000 downloads. Let's say you have a free-to-play game, and Genshin Impact has been brought up like 6 or 7 times in the chat already. Yeah, Genshin Impact's probably going to suffer.
If it's free to play, that's not 200,000 in revenue, because the revenue.
Hold
how
on,
are they?
Hold on, John.
Okay, all right.
In-app purchasing counts as revenue.
It does. It no. Well, okay.
Yes, it does.
According to this article, that's not talked about, and I didn't see any comment about in-app purchases. So I don't know. Possibly, sure, could.
They don't mention anything about in-app purchases, but revenue for a game is revenue for a game, and that's as layman as I can make it. In-app purchasing is still a purchase of a game, an asset in a game. It's still revenue directly tied to the download of a game, right?
Sure, unless you consider it, say, an update of a game.
So if you had 5 million downloads and you eclipsed 200,000 in revenue, you'd be on the hook for 20 cents per install at 5 million installs. Maybe charge 99 cents for your game and charge less for your in-app purchasing. Make people enjoy the game, and maybe that's a crappy business model in the first place.
Yeah, well, we all know in-app purchases are a crappy model to begin with. So
if you, as a game developer, do not adjust your revenue stream to account for licensing fees and everything else, that's a poor business decision. Charge 99 cents to download a game. You're not going to get 5 million people to download it. Sorry, Raid Shadow Legends. Sorry, Genshin Impact. Sorry, whatever else.
Angry Birds, Pokemon Go.
Right. Gosh, what was the first Unity game for iPhone? The Sword Swing. I blanked on the name earlier, too. Infinity Blade. There we go.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. But if knowing that you might be on the hook for revenue sharing based on your current use model of the Unity engine, if you don't adjust that to account for that, that's on you. And I'm sorry if I can't feel overly sympathetic to Raid Shadow Legends and Genshin Impact. Because the whales are not going to keep that one afloat.
Hmm. Yeah, I would be curious of how the definition of that, because couldn't you, in legal terms or how they're saying it, because if their verbiage of their usage, then you say all in-app purchases are technically upgrades, which would be a different download of a version of a game?
No, all in-app purchases count as revenue. In any money that you bring in is revenue.
Sure,
revenue has a finite definition. It's money.
Well, you could program it to be something different. Purchase to be version 0.11752. That's a single download of that.
No,
there's a legal technical way of getting around it.
No, because it is still part of the same gross title. And so in that case, unless you're downloading a strictly unique title, which version 1.7.384.2U2 would not be a distinctly different version of the game. So
So for all of the article that we got, or at least that I read, very limited in it. And so I also think a lot of the things that Unity has, at least the social media wise that I saw was released, was again very broad term, and that's what most people complain about. It would be interesting to see what happens. Yeah. But Unity has already stated only 10% of their user base would be affected, stuff like that is probably not, I don't think Raid Shadow Legends or something like that is even built in Unity, is it?
I have no idea. I was spitballing based on other mobile games. A lot of mobile games are built in Unity.
So, I'm sure they already went through the analysis of Who's Ooh. Using it? What it's going to hurt?
Vince says, just use V-Bucks. This is clever.
Again, there's a workaround. Like
virtual currency inside of a real game where your revenue is generated based on purchases within your environment, not based on the title that it applies to. Ooh, that's a good workaround.
Yeah, so I think that would work. You know, something like that would work.
I bought 200,000 in V-Bucks. I can spend it on any Epic game that I want.
I want.
It's a service of Epic stores, not a service of this individual title.
Yeah. And when Problem one developer solved. Only has one thing, he just develops that.
That's amazing.
There you go.
Yep. No, that's your solution. That's exactly your solution. No in-app purchases for anything. You have to go buy a gift card from somewhere else on the store.
Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
And you can program that automatically with no one even knowing it.
Right. Right. You know. Nope, sorry. All the V-Buck money goes to a shell company of ours. It's not even our revenue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Speaking of money.
Speaking of money.
And where it goes. And a lot of people spend it frivolously. And electronic video game type gambling, in-app purchases,
yeah,
or whatever. Vegas. Oh, man. MGM Grand.
MGM Jeff, Grand found to be guilty of literally the earliest form of hacking. That is a 10-minute call to a help desk after some basic social information gathering.
The earliest and still most, like, used hack, probably.
Oh, God, yeah. It's amazing this hack is not used more, or at least that we don't hear about it more. But the opening scene of hackers outside of Dade Murphy getting arrested and Zero Cool being, you know, found guilty of 1801 systems on Wall Street, you know, an entire trading day loss and things like that.
Yeah.
You fast forward and he's hacking into a television studio, a TV network. And what happens is he calls this guard late night and he goes, "Hey, you know, hey, this is you know, so and so, and I'm calling cuz, you know, man, boss Mr. Mitsurugi is really going to have my head if I don't have this paper on his desk by tomorrow morning. And do you know anything about computers?" And the security guard goes, "Ah." And he goes, "Well, yeah, my TCP/IP decided to throw a whole conniption fit and barfed up all over my HTTP. And, you know, I'm in a real bind here. Can you read me the number off the modem?" "The what?" He goes, "It's the little box on the desk with some blinky lights. There should be a number on that. Can you read me that?" Yeah, here, it's 555-8212. "Oh, thank you so much." And hangs up, and then...
"You saved my ass, yeah."
"Yeah, saved my ass. You know, Mr. Mitsurugi, you know, there's definitely a promotion in this for you." And then hangs up. I think it was Mr. Mitsubishi. But anyway, hangs up and then takes over the TV network because he now knows the modem number, the phone number associated with the modem that can pick up his call and establish a telnet session, and the rest is history. That's the oldest hack in the book, is getting someone to help you, is calling someone and saying, "Hey, man, I'm really in a bind here.
So-and-so, the boss's name.
The boss's name, man, they're really riding my ass lately. You know, I've got this blah, blah, blah. Telnet, use SSH." Oh, my child of the 2000s. Yeah, no, this was 1994, 95. Something like that.
93, I thought.
Yeah, it was back there.
95.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so getting someone to feel sympathetic for you and help you and divulge information that they normally wouldn't divulge. If I walked up to someone on the street and said, "Hey, read me the number off that little box," and like, no. But if I go, Man, I'm working here. I just got out of college. You know, the boss is really needing this report. If he said if I don't get it to him by midnight, I'm gonna be fired tomorrow, and you know, I'm gonna have to move back home with my folks. And God, I hate them. And you know, man, is there anything you can do to help me out? You know, I really need to get into my computer. Can there should be a box with some blinking lights with a number on top of it. Can you bring me that number? I
Oh yeah.
swear I'll bring you a cake in the morning.
Yeah, I'll
And
bring a case of beer.
right. And 9 times out of 10, someone just working their job goes, you know, I don't know you, but you seem to know enough about the company and you knew there was a box next to me. I could probably help you. You obviously know enough about what you're doing. Hops, God wouldn't be up at this hour. But it's a tale as old as time. Like it is the most commonly used hack. It is how to get entry into a building. It social engineering, you know. And yes, the fancy stuff happens with computers on the back end, but you still got to get in. Well, someone called the MGM Grand help desk, impersonated an employee, got a password reset, and then crypto locked the whole thing.
Yep. 10 minutes
Yep.
or 10 minute conversation.
So a company valued at $33.9 billion was defeated by a 10-minute phone call.
Yeah, I know. If you think your company is getting hacked and it's always this person on keyboard and all these matrix style
Oh,
things,
man.
no. Oh, 99% of the time, some stupid like this. Someone walks by and leaves a free USB thing on the or a USB drive in the parking lot. Someone picks it up. I'm going to plug that into my computer. And boom, they're in. That's it. That's how 99% of the hacks in the world work.
That's right.
Social engineering.
Right. While a lot of my organizations, I had to teach them on, hey, don't open this email with a random invoice or with a random PDF that says invoice.exe. It's not something you want to open. Do we know these people? Do you know who was sending it? Can you verify
Yeah,
it?
it's because we went through that already as high schoolers and teenagers. Limpbizkit.exe. We're like, oh, yeah, we learned a lesson. Don't
Yep.
ever do that again.
Yep. I certainly porn bombed the family laptop once or twice,
Yeah.
getting onto to Juarez sites and downloading, you know, specifically that. No, maybe it's just a zip file. That's really fancy.
Yeah, nope. I don't know what this
Nope.
is. Ah, that's cool. It's a new type of encryption. It makes it super compressed.
Yeah. Why are there 40 shortcuts to porn sites on the desktop?
It wasn't me. I don't know.
What are you listening to on your MP3 player? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you know what I had to train users on was spear phishing.
Oh yeah,
Because
I still do.
most people knew not to open EXEs or zip files from people they didn't know. What they didn't know was that, hey, if the CEO emails you at 4:30 p.m. on a Friday and says, I need every social security number, invoice, and income level and home address of every employee in the organization because I'm at this conference and we have this like this compliance thing I have to do for government. It's like real pain in my ass. You know, I'm really sorry to ask this of you, you know, as you're trying to go home to your family for the weekend, but man, you'd really be doing me a so that's not real.
Nope.
They didn't accidentally email you from their Gmail account, which doesn't exist. By the way, you also have their cell phone. You could text them and say, hey, did you need this information? And if they say no,
Yeah.
yeah.
No, I go even now I have to teach people at my company, and they get every now and then, I would say every 7 to 8 weeks, someone calls me up. Hey, did the owner email me asking to help opening this file? I was like, do you know this company? The owner doesn't even have a computer. He's not going to be, and then let alone email some low-level graphic artist. Why
Why
did
would
you
he
open this
email
file?
you
Yeah.
for that information?
and he has a literally direct line to me.
Right.
Why does he care about? And you're like, oh, I tried opening it 3 to 4 times. Mm-hmm. You did what?
By the way, John, we need to talk later because.
Oh yeah, we Jeff. The conference. Last week. Oh man. Yep.
How were things?
With
as little control as possible.
Yeah. A fraction bit better.
Okay.
A fraction bit better. So
I still take the odd contract, and John called me, and I'm like, okay, I need to help you.
I need help.
Please let me help you.
Jeff, here's a pile of money. Help me.
Yeah. What's funny is I sent him a quote and he goes, he would have paid 10 times that. And I'm like, no, no, no. That was for the simple answer. Like, if you want the complicated answer, I'm happy to take 10 times that.
Oh, I know. No, you are, it's a 50-50 chance right now. You are still in the works. They're either going for your higher end bid or the ultra high end bid.
Yeah.
And so that is the the coin toss. That's what's going on. Because they're like, well, Jeff's that works down. And we're that's great. We have to wait on this.
By
other
the way,
one,
so. this gets all of your my high bid. I know I'm selling myself here, but my high bid gets you 4 years newer than your current hardware, gets full replicas on everything, and makes you impervious to ransomware and the like.
Just to let you know, that's how. I don't want to say how old everything is.
I know, based on the little information, that even at the price I quoted you, it's still an insane value. So
I know. Okay. I know. So, oh yeah, no, it's literally it's you and one other thing. That's yeah. Where it's at. So, and then I am not in charge of the bidding or any of the that particular decision make. I'm not. But they were very happy to know you were around.
Yes. I am nothing if not intriguing.
Yes.
Okay. So.
Problem is, once they get you, they're gonna be like, he's that cheap. Okay, we'll get him all the time. We don't care if he's filming a video.
Right. I'm happy to pass you along to long-term service providers. I'm a project guy.
I know you're a long-term service. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
I got to talk to him for a bit. He's a pretty cool guy.
Yes, he is. So anyway, it is 8:20. We made it through all of our news articles.
We did.
Yeah. A couple of people were complaining. I thought this was a news show. It is. It's 5 minutes of us talking about the news and then 20 minutes BSing in between, talking about how much we like the beers that we're drinking. And then we'll get to the next news story.
Yeah.
That's how the show rolls.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every week's a little different, but.
Yep.
Yeah.
You either love it or you hate it. So.
We don't make the news. We just talk about it. If there's nothing ultra to talk about, then we got to fill the time. We could have gone through all of these articles and be done in the first hour. And just not.
And again, I hope bringing a little bit of nuance and math to things like the Unity story, where it's like Unity themselves is saying we expect no more than 10% to be affected by this. And me going, the 10% that are affected outside of like niche cases like Genshin Impact, it's going to be 1% of their revenue or less. Like it was 1.3% if you charged $15 for your retail cost. If you charge $40 for your retail cost, you're in the 0.035% level of like your overall revenue that you're going to have to give Unity. It's not that much. If you go out of business because of this, that's because you're really bad at business. So, hope that brought a little clarity. I'm not defending Unity in any way. This was really crappy the way that they brought this terms of or change of terms of service around. But it's not exactly the end of the world for every developer that's out there. So let's just call it what it is. Anyway, John, anything to promote? Good of the order? I need to get your merch on the store.
Oh yeah, someone was saying that they'd like to they wanted to buy some, so that's good for both of us.
Yes.
New merch coming. Check out Craft Computing Store if you'd like the drinkware we're using, even though I didn't use it today. But you know, if you want to drink like a professional pro, check it out. I will state the etching on the bottom of the glasses is superb. It is so wonderful. I have gotten to use it on multiple beers, a couple of videos. If you want to see a pickle one, that's even in there too. It extremely helps with
But
aromatics.
it
It's
totally
fantastic.
works.
It totally works. It's a fantastic quality, is amazing. It's all in-house, custom made by Jeff himself. So he literally kisses each glass as it leaves. So you get a little DNA of Jeff too.
That's right.
So what base AKA wash everything before you use it. Yeah, people are asking if we're gonna do any Star Trek tonight. Unfortunately, I am behind on Lower Decks because I've had quite a busy last 2 weeks.
Yeah, me as well. Yep.
I've gotten 5 minutes into episode one. Fantastic so far. Voyager, that's all I'll state.
Yeah,
Fantastic.
I saw the little bit of a teaser that it's in Voyager. I've seen a screenshot of the cargo bay, and I'm like,
Oh, the first 5 minutes were fantastic. You know, big fun. It looks like a fun episode, especially even the name. You know, the what is it? Not Neelix. Oh gosh, we're already Tuvix.
Tuvix, yeah. You know
Tuvix.
Janeway straight up murdered Tuvix, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's what it seems like the whole thing is. It's like or the conundrum. So that's fantastic. And they were talking about the gel packs within the first 5 minutes. Looks really fun, but it'll be next time because like I said, I got 5 minutes into it, and then I got phone calls I haven't even released videos in the past 2 weeks. I've just been that busy, unfortunately. Jeff knows, certain other people know. It's been a rough couple of weeks at my work, so it's yeah.
Yep.
But soon I got plenty coming up. I got Steve. I got a couple extra special pickle beers. I got some non-beer, hard soda, some hard iced tea.
I need to finally bring that Fort George over to you, or you need to
We
come
got
over here
to
and
do
film an episode.
what something like that. We need to do something. I got that Elijah Craig. We got
Oh, that's
24 year old.
right.
We got a review together.
Oh.
That would be fun. But Steve's like begging every time. He's like, "So what are we doing one of these?" I'm waiting for Joe. Maybe we do like what we were talking about. We'll do one of the lives, and we'll do it at Hops and
I'd be totally down with that.
it's all going to be high-end, expensive beers.
As long as you got a place
Because,
for me to sleep.
yeah, there's the couch somewhere.
Couch is fine. I'm not picky.
Well, there's the bed upstairs, but it's very frou-frou-y or you know, orchestrated. My wife decorated it, so. If you like, lots of pillows and white and big fluffy things, it's fine.
Room service included? Like I
You can go downstairs. It's try the
Okay.
beer, but that's why I still sleep on the couch versus that bed. Oh, the couch is more comfortable.
Anyway, this has been episode 301 of Talking Heads, and we've gone on long enough, seeing as how we're 27 minutes past now. If you liked the episode, make sure to hit that thumbs up button, subscribe to Craft Computing if you haven't done so already. Don't miss a new upload or a new episode of Talking Heads. We air every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time for the latest in beer and tech news. Follow me on the social medias at Craft Computing. Follow John at Hops and Brews. You can find us just about everywhere. If you like the content you see on the channel and want to help support us in what we do, as John mentioned earlier, head on over to craftcomputing.store, where you can get some custom etched glassware that is both designed and etched in the house. We've also got things like bottle openers, coasters, all kinds of stuff, and Hops and Brews merch coming to the store probably this weekend once I get off my ass and finally add it to the store.
There we
It's all
go.
been designed. I just need to like take pictures and make it happen. So I'm going to make that happen. Anyway,
Gonna see a boost in sales.
that's right for like a single day.
Because
That's all I need.
it's going to be the biggest day of sales ever, though.
Yeah.
Gonna break your record.
Probably not.
I'll promote it on all my other stuff. Be like, why? Who's this person? Who's that?
I sold bricks.
Oh, okay, fine. I want bricks. I want bricks.
By the way, I am working on an update video for the studio. If you bought a brick and you're curious about why I'm still in my office, there is an update video planning stages right now. There's been a lot of back and forth from the city on what I can and cannot do. I can do a lot of things. The city said I can't, and then they said, oh, wait, now that you've quoted that regulation, you totally can. So please resubmit your plans. And I'm like, son of a...
Because we don't know anything what we're talking about.
Right. So where's my brick? I will be sending out notifications on how you can buy a copy of your brick once I start moving forward with the project. So that's all happening eventually. It'll happen. Don't worry about it. It's cool. Anyway, thank you all so much for watching. As always, we'll see you